It's Tuesday, September 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi, and welcome. Coming up, refugees, mainly from Syria, begin arriving in Germany.
We have one of the great tragedies of the modern era, and thus far, the West has not been able to develop the means to put an end to this conflict.
The United States is urged to take a more direct role in the refugee crisis. Also ahead, Vietnam looks for strength amid China's economic weakening, and we hear music that is truly enlightening. It's all on today's International Edition. Both France and Britain agreed Monday to accept thousands of refugees from the war-torn Mideast, but the numbers they have agreed to take in are dwarfed by the masses of migrants streaming to new lives in Germany. French President François Hollande said his country would accept 24,000 refugees over the next 2 years, while British Prime Minister David Cameron said 20,000 Syrian refugees from camps in Turkey, Jordan, and Syria would settle in Britain over the next 5 years. Mr. Cameron said vulnerable children and orphans would be given priority. Europe has struggled to cope with the continent's biggest migrant crisis since World War II, with Hungary at the forefront of trying to block their passage to much wealthier Germany and Scandinavian countries. Germany says that 800,000 refugees looking to escape war and poverty in their homelands could settle in the country by the end of the year. In Budapest, VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez has been monitoring the influx of refugees, and from there, he spoke with International Edition host Susan Yaki.
What is happening is that with Hungary lifting many of the restrictions that it had imposed on the refugees, word is getting back to those who are at the earlier stages of this pipeline. What I am hearing from the border now is I just got off the phone with a Hungarian relief worker who is helping deal with the influx. He described a very dire situation as people are hearing of the assured passage through Hungary. They're deciding to make the trip. Some have been holding in Macedonia. Some have been in Serbia. They're making their way toward Hungary. The Hungarian government has said it is reinforcing its border controls. There is a fence with razor-sharp wire that exists there. The government said that it will repair the holes in which many of these refugees have been using to cross. Others have been using railroad track, rail lines, to come from Serbia into Hungary. And so that is a situation that the Hungarian government is very much bracing for. On the other end, you have Austria, which has been receiving the migrants very efficiently, taking them from the trains that they're arriving from in Vienna, and putting them onto trains bound for Germany, where many of the migrants tell me is, in fact, where they want to go.
And how can they handle all these people? What supplies are there for them?
There's been an incredible outpouring of goodwill donations on the part of private citizens. The government has also been facilitating matters in that they've installed water faucets. There are washing facilities. There are signs pointing them to where they need to go to catch the train to the border. But mainly it's private relief organizations, private individuals showing up with bags of food, offering assistance. There are even people driving into Budapest, both from within Hungary and also people from the Czech Republic who I talked to, who are driving their private cars and offering transportation to the border. Now, this is a situation that the Hungarian government has warned people against. They are warning people that the law does not allow private citizens to transport people who are undocumented across Hungarian territory. Nonetheless, the people I spoke to, the volunteers, said that when they hear the news reports of the suffering of these refugees, they cannot help but come and do whatever they can personally to ease what they see as purely a matter of human suffering.
And Luis, when I spoke with you yesterday, you mentioned that many of these people would really rather be at home than be in this situation going to another country.
I've interviewed dozens of refugees in the days that I've been here, Susan, and I can tell you that not one has said that he or she is happy making this trip. Every single one has said, if things were okay in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, I would be home. That's what I'm getting consistently from people. There's also some expressions of frustration and anger on why the United States is not doing more to end the fighting in Syria. They said that if the fighting in Syria, as one example, were to end, there would be absolutely no reason to leave their country.
VOA's Luis Ramirez in Budapest. VOA's Andrew Palczewski has been following the social media trends on two interesting stories, including the refugees in Europe. Andrew, what are people posting about today?
Well, this migrant story continues to trend as they make their way. And the term that's trending right now is 20,000 Syrians. And this is because the UK has said they will take in 20,000 Syrians by 2020. So that announcement's making a lot of waves on social media. A lot of people saying it's great that the UK is taking this step. Other people saying it's not enough. So it's a back and forth on social media about that, and people waiting to see what other countries will jump in. I know there have been announcements by Germany and other countries welcoming these migrants in. Australia said they want to help out. We talked about on the earlier show about the candlelight vigils, a lot of sympathy for the migrants there, and seeing if perhaps the U.S. will take them in or other countries maybe in the West. The other big story trending today is Superhenge. Stonehenge, of course, the big stone monument in the UK. Well, they found one, they're unearthing one that they said is massive in scale, 100 stones, and it's only about 3 kilometers from Stonehenge, so it's right nearby, but they're saying that there might be more things buried underground. So that's being talked about a lot, saying what else are they going to find as they dig down near around Stonehenge, and what else will they find?
Thanks, Andrew. Well, you can definitely find us on social media. Follow our Twitter account. It's at @VOA_IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The head of the International Rescue Committee has appealed to the United States to do more to help Europe cope with its migration crisis. Former British Labour Party leader David Miliband, appearing Sunday on U.S. television, says countries like Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey are bending under the weight of caring for millions of Syrians fleeing conflict. He suggests the United States should take about half the UN-recommended 130,000 Syrians resettled throughout the world by the end of 2016. Associate Professor Jonathan Edelman of the University of Denver told VOA's Victor Beatty there will be little European Union leaders can do about the Syrian conflict when they meet to discuss migration September 14th in Brussels.
The Bashar Assad regime has now killed, by one estimate, 240,000 civilians. And then on the other side, there's the horrors of ISIS. And so the Europeans, I don't think, can do much or intend to do much about that, a little bit. But I think what they can do is help deal with this really great tragedy that we're seeing today. And we need to remember one other thing, that the numbers are staggering, that Syria has a population of about 22, 23 million. And of them, over 4 million of them are now living in other Arab countries or Turkey right next door, and 7 other million have been displaced within Syria. So we have one of the great tragedies of the modern era, and thus far, the West has not been able to develop the means to put an end to this conflict.
Will all of these migrants, some of them coming from the Middle East, others from South Asia, elsewhere, will they change the face of Europe?
Well, I don't think in the short run. The face of Europe, after all, is about 500 million people, of which 440 million are in the European Union. But if millions more come, then it's quite possible, together with the migrants who have already had a major impact. So I think down the road, this is a really difficult problem for the Europeans. And for the Germans, because they have 80 million people in their population, and they have, of course, the tragic history of World War II, they now, under Angela Merkel, are willing to take a substantial number of these, and they have the capacity to do it. But many of the other European countries, like the Greeks, for example, don't want to do this because not just because of their attitudes, but for the simple reason that they have deep economic problems of their own.
How long can this go on before anti-immigrant sentiment begins to rise in the EU?
It's already starting, and it's going to get much worse. Because the problem is that Bashar Assad is still holding on in Syria to Damascus, to most of Aleppo, to Latakia, which is his Alawite stronghold. He's got the big cities on his side, and he doesn't mind killing another few hundred thousand people. And the West has not really intervened effectively. You know, the United States said, oh, we're going to train Syrians, and that was a noble idea. And the recent study that came out before Congress said that we've actually trained less than 100, and a third of them have already been taken captive. So we face some really significant problems of our own. How much do we want to get involved with this? ISIS is just not going away. ISIS is actually expanding. And they are occupying over a third of Syria and over a third of Iraq and posing a tremendous trouble and tremendous problem when we get down to the decapitation and enslavement of large numbers of people who haven't fled. So this is a great tragedy all the way around.
David Miliband, the former UK Labour leader, is now head of the International Rescue Mission. He was on U.S. television Sunday saying the U.S. should do more to ease the European migrant crisis.
It's a possibility, but I don't think so. Right now, the United States is taking about 1,500 of these migrants. We have very strict laws because we have our own issues in terms of the million people we take every year, in terms of the illegals for about 11 million and so forth. And thus far, I think until we saw that picture of that poor three-year-old child, you know, that had now been killed, and most of the rest of his family. So maybe we'll begin to see some change in American perception. But right now, it just hasn't been sufficient enough that the administration or Congress has really gotten involved. I think the Europeans are going to come and ask the United States to get involved, but I have no idea right now that there's enough pressure, especially during presidential election season, where many other things are on people's mind, whether it's the economy, whether it's Hillary Clinton, you know, whether it's Donald Trump. This, I think, would still rate low, but maybe it's going to improve.
IRC leader David Miliband adds the Gulf states should play a role in a political solution to the Syrian conflict and could do more to care for millions of displaced Syrians. Further to the east, many business people in Vietnam are closely watching the economy as China, their country's biggest trading partner, devalues its currency and struggles with economic slowdown. But Ralph Jennings reports that Vietnam is making bigger changes that could help turn it into a regional factory export powerhouse.
When China let its yuan currency weaken by 3.5% in August, Vietnam took immediate notice. The $1.86 billion Southeast Asian economy, like China's, is led by export manufacturing, and that sector grew nearly 9% last year. China's cheaper currency would let Chinese export manufacturers earn more money offshore, competing with their peers in Vietnam. Vietnam may also face a flood of Chinese imports as its neighbor to the north leans more on other countries to escape slowing demand at home. Pham Lu Hong, Associate Investment Advisory Director with SSI Research in Hanoi, says low tariffs and problems in China are already increasing shipments of Chinese trucks and steel to Vietnam.
We set the border with China, so we import a lot. So if the economy is slowing down, I think cheap Chinese product could be easier to come into Vietnam and flood the market here.
But Vietnam is taking steps to bolster its own exporters. The country of 89 million people and a $50 billion annual trade relationship with China devalued its own currency in August. The central bank in Hanoi had already let the Vietnamese dong weaken twice earlier in the year to stoke more foreign investment in the country, not offshore. Vietnam now vies with its neighbors Cambodia and Myanmar to win factories that produce garments for world export. Like much of developing Southeast Asia, Vietnam has also struggled to find money for infrastructure that meets demands of international cargo shippers. It accepted development aid from Japan to open a new air terminal in Hanoi this year and ease overcapacity there. More aid went to help build Ho Chi Minh City's yet-to-open metro system. With stronger infrastructure and labor still relatively cheap, Vietnam also hopes to win higher-value manufacturing to replace garments. That ambition competes directly with China's export manufacturing sector. Intel and Samsung Electronics have already invested billions of dollars in Vietnam since 2010, the possible start of a high-tech hardware industry. Vietnam is also expected to finish a free trade agreement with the European Union by 2018 and join the U.S.-led Trans-Pacific Partnership trading bloc that's on track to cover nearly a third of the world economy. Ralph Jennings, VOA News, Hanoi.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Canadian Indian singer Raghav Mathur describes his music as unabashedly pop. But recently, his song Until the Sun Comes Up has been used to raise awareness of the needs of the developing world, especially in Africa. VOA's David Byrd has this look at the song and how it changed the lives of some Tanzanian school children and the singer.
If you listen to the words of Canadian crooner Raghav's song, Until the Sun Comes Up, you might think it is just another dance-based pop tune. You wouldn't know it is helping to transform the lives of school children in a small African village.
Here we go tonight, baby, you and I, where the stars shining bright. It's just the two of us until the sun comes up.
Raghav says that when he learned that there are currently more than 1 billion people living in the world without electricity, he wanted to help.
That 1.3 billion people have no electricity. And so when I say that number, people often think, I mean to say a million. I mean, it's a sixth of the planet has zero electricity. And until you go there, and not just go there, but experience the, or hear the stories of the negative experiences through the kerosene industry, you can't really totally understand the impact.
So he teamed with Solar Aid, a nonprofit dedicated to eliminating the kerosene lamp, to distribute 320 solar-powered lights to school-age children in Tanzania. Raghav says he got the idea from watching an old YouTube video.
And they take a bucket of water and they put it in a village in like India or Bangladesh or somewhere, in what is clearly an impoverished village. And in it they've put a light. And I think at first people kind of look at it like, you know, what is this hanging around here? And throughout the YouTube video, you see people start coming up to it, playing with it, and the joy that it creates. And I thought, well, what a great way to depict joy if we could incorporate that in like a pop record.
Just as the sun comes up.
Here we go.
Raghav teamed with rapper Nelly and Bollywood star Abhishek Bachchan to film the reaction of the students when they received the lights. The singer says that the joy seen in the video is real. None of it was staged or choreographed.
Their idea of in their homes or in the school would have been the use of kerosene. And when the sun went down, that's the climax of the video. They kind of started partying without... It wasn't choreographed and it wasn't... shot to be a music video. They just were having such a great time.
The 34-year-old Canadian singer says he hopes his song and the video will inspire other musicians to become socially active and aware. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
You have been listening to International Edition. We're at voanews.com. We're also on social media. Follow us on Twitter, VOA_IE. We always like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zahrat Abu Zaid, and you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the first Monday of September every year, America pauses to honor its workers and the contributions they make to our nation's strength and prosperity. The notion that work is valued and even noble dates to the ancients. "Seest thou a man diligent in his labor?" the book of Proverbs asks. "He shall stand before kings." In the United States, the belief goes back well over a century. As a holiday, the Labor Day celebration began in the 1880s in New York City with an effort by labor unions to demonstrate the numbers, strength, and spirit of working men and women. They organized parades and rallies and used the demonstrations to press for new laws to benefit workers, such as standardizing the 8-hour workday. The movement spread to other cities, and in 1894, Congress made it a national holiday honoring all American workers. The association with trade and labor unions has declined over the years. Today, for most people, the holiday represents the last long weekend of summer, a time to relax and spend time with family and friends. There are still parades and rallies, particularly in election years, and also sporting events and picnics. For many, Labor Day means a no-Labor Day before the change of seasons and start of a new school year. Over time, work in the U.S. itself has changed. More Americans now are occupied in offices and services than who toil on the factory floor. The connection between the holiday and the nation's workers remains real, though, as recognition of the source of so much of America's economic and social achievements.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.